Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Welcome, everyone. Today we have Jem Fuller, who has lived a colorful global life, from barefoot backpacker to corporate leader, from fire dancer to travel consultant. He is author of The Art of Conscious Communication. Welcome, Jem.
Hello, Jane. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I'm excited to talk about this. So communication, you decided to write a book on it. Tell us your story leading up to that, because I'm sure it, you know, has a colorful story.
yeah, it is. It is colorful. I don't want to bore you for hours and hours. I've packed a lot in, so let's cherry pick something that might be of interest for you and your listeners that got me to end up writing a book about communication.
Jem, that came from a bit from a casualty that happened to you, didn't it? Like your desire to just not live the average life. Right? Because often that leads us to do things that are different. We decide we're going to take a different path.
Yeah. Look, there was a couple of things that happened on my, just 5 days before my 18th birthday, in my last year of high school, my best friend had a motorcycle accident. And on my 18th birthday, I was sitting bedside in the hospital while he was in a coma and on life support. And then 5 days after my 18th birthday, the decision was made to switch off the machines. And so my best friend died, and that was massive for me when I was 18. But also throughout my childhood, there'd been a relationship with my father, which was not simple. I adored my father and I loved him, but I also just did not want to be him. There were certain aspects of my father that I abhorred. And when I was 6 years old, there was an event when I was six where he lost his temper and threw me around a room, and that, you know, as I look back to that now, that was certainly a point in my life where I wanted to run away. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I was running away when I was 18. And then I traveled for pretty much all of my 20s and early 30s. I was either traveling or I was working some weird and crazy job somewhere. And that's where the fire dancing comes in, and the tattooist and motorcycle courier and volunteer in third world countries and, you know, Reiki healer and Chinese masseuse and reflexologist, and the list goes on. I really packed a lot into those decades before falling in love and starting a family. And then when kids came along and I was a father, I thought, wow, I don't have any, you know, I don't have a career per se. I've got lots of world experience, but I didn't have any qualifications beyond reflexology and Chinese masseuse. So I started a career and I ended up in a suit and tie, which was very weird for me because I'd been certainly anti-establishment, very alternative. And so I did that for 8 years, ended up in corporate leadership, ended up learning about the stuff that I'm still to this day fascinated in, which is human behavior, neuro-linguistic programming, behavioral profiling, coaching, all the stuff that I do now. And then I had a midlife, people call it a midlife crisis, Jane. For me, it was a midlife opportunity. It was a midlife awakening, but I lost everything. Lost my marriage, lost my career, lost my house, lost everything I owned, except thankfully my two boys, my two children. I kept them in our arrangement of week on, week off. So I've been a 50-50 single parent for the last 9 or 10 years. And rebuilt everything, and actually the most important thing to rebuild was my relationship with self. Mm-hmm. I'd come to a point where there was a lot of self-loathing and self-shame and self-sabotage, and you know, this belief that I wasn't good enough is what had happened, you know, inadvertently throughout the first half of my life. So I needed to rebuild that and repair that, which I've been doing for 9 years, and then everything changed. And so through my years of coaching over the last 9 years, I've been running a coaching practice. And after thousands of hours of coaching, I'm getting to answer your question now. I'm getting to the point about communication. It became pretty clear to me that a lot of the times that humans stumble, a lot of the times we trip over and things go a little bit pear-shaped is in our miscommunication. you know, whether it's a leader with a team or whether it's teammates or whether it's in our intimate relationships with our loved ones, quite often we're tripping over, and it's not that we don't love each other. We love each other. We're just missing each other in the communication of that love. And then, so I was aware that communication is a struggle for a lot of people. And then, you know, as we look more broadly out to the world stage and the state of play globally now, and it's just apparent there are people who have differing ideas, you know, whether it's pro-life or pro-choice or anti-vax or vax or red or blue or, you know, Republican or Democratic, or people who have these different views that they're completely entitled to, but their way of trying to get their view across is they're just shouting at each other and canceling each other. And I'm looking at this thinking, wow, you people are not advancing your cause. You're not evolving humanity right now. You're just shouting at each other. So I think there's a desperate need globally for us to remember how to communicate more consciously. So that's how the book started.
Yeah, it's very important. And I think listening is one of the most important parts of communication, which, you know, often doesn't happen. But can you share, you know, some of the most important things that you write about?
Yeah. And you've just mentioned one of them. You know, listening is such an important part of it. And, you know, communication, I had to research this when I was preparing my TEDx talk. I did a talk on communication. And so I looked into it, and communication comes from the Latin noun communicatio, which means a sharing, and the Latin verb communicare, which means to make common. And that can't happen without listening being involved. So it's not, communication is not a telling. It's not telling someone something. It's a sharing. And to share something, it has to be received. So yes, listening is a massive part of it. In the book, I propose that I think that the first place, the most important place to start in terms of improving your communication, or at least becoming more conscious, which is to be more aware of communication, is in the communication with yourself. You know, we have this internal dialogue, this constant chatter in our minds. It's like a running commentary. I don't know if you've ever sat and just noticed or observed, but whenever you're not engaged with someone else or numbing yourself through watching TV or something, there's a constant commentary in your head. And quite often we're talking to ourselves, and quite often that the quality of that communication is poor. You know, we speak really harshly to ourselves, and I think it's a place to start, because this then impacts our relationship with self. You know, if you think about a time where you feel like you've let yourself down, or you haven't, you know, you've behaved in a situation that you're not happy with, how do you speak to yourself afterwards? Because we are quite often terrible to ourselves, in fact, almost abusive in the way we reprimand ourselves. And I think that this is not healthy for our relationship with self. And I think that our relationship with self very much determines the quality of our relationship with the rest of life, anybody else that we care about. So, yeah, I think that starting to become more aware of your communication with self is the place to start, and then it goes out from there in terms of how we communicate with life, with others, with people we love, with people we don't love, people we work with, and so on.
Yeah, and to realize, you know, a lot of that self-talk comes from a programming or our unconscious mind that has, you know, there to protect us, but often has these programs running that we fully believe. And yeah. I've got to a place where I go, wait a minute, let's just, you know, even in the middle of the night, you know, when you start ruminating and thinking, I'll now kind of wake myself up and say, let's, this isn't important really. If you need to write it down, okay, but we can deal with this tomorrow. And yeah. Right. And it's just, it's powerful to realize you can do that. And same with a fight or something that's happened, you can say to yourself, well, let's reframe this, or, you know, you did your best, but yeah, we could go back and do this or that. And, you know, rather than just letting it take this huge
part of our life and run with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. You know, we identify, our ego latches on to whatever it can to have some sense of identity, and we identify with our thoughts, but we're not our thoughts, like you just alluded to. Our thoughts, you know, that predominantly pre-programmed, and we've been indoctrinated in lots of ways, and they're subconscious, and they bubble forth in these, you know, connections across the neurons and the synapses in our brain. And then we think, oh my, that's me. But it's not you. They're just reflex firings through the neurology of your brain, and most of them are predispositioned. So yeah, it's lovely to be aware of that and free yourself from that and say, hey, you know, and we can actually choose what we focus on, you know. Yeah. And even though our thoughts are pretty incessant and they're nonstop, and they can be very persistent, these thoughts, and the ego, the identification with them can be very persistent, but with, I believe, similar to the tone that you had, Jane, when you were explaining how you talk to yourself, to be loving in your approach to self, you know, and say, hey, we don't need to think about this right now. You know, you can write it down, but you're not going to solve the world's problems at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And as soon as you realize this, I still catch myself, even though I've studied the unconscious mind and it's my passion, I still catch it. And I'm always surprised at the power I have to switch it off. And and it just learning you can do that, or if the first time you see it, is very empowering. So I love what you're teaching. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love. And so how long have you been, you know, exploring and understanding the unconscious mind and how to have some say in what goes on for yourself?
Well, I read Bruce Lipton when I was in my early 20s. And so I really understood the power of the mind over the body at that time. Mm. And that most disease had an effect, you know, that was mental, emotional, some trauma that blocks, you know, our energy patterns. And then I became an ND. And then as an ND, I fell in love with homeopathy because it has this mind-body connection. And Divya Chambra teaches the way to get to the unconscious mind, to stop the block or the stop the program that's running that causes the disease. So I'm very passionate about it. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, no, I find it fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. So a conscious communicator, that's what you are. And I feel that immediately because you're drawing out something from me that can add to our conversation. And it's just so beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. Look, I think if we are curious, you know, honestly curious and with an open mind, that's going to help the communication, right? And and it's funny because, again, you know, in our now, it might sound like I think ego is a bad thing. I don't. Ego is a part of being human. We need to have a sense of identity, so that's completely fine. I just think that having a greater awareness of when it's our ego at play is functional. It helps, and so our ego is very defensive in terms of the way it thinks things should be, its idea of reality. And so our ego will hold on very tightly to its opinion. And quite often in communication, the listener, if you could see me, I'm doing inverted commas because they're not actually listening, they're queuing up to speak. The listener is holding on very tightly to their point of view, and they're waiting for the moment where they can jump in and tell the other person either that they agree or disagree, rather than loosening their grip, so to speak, and opening their mind and sitting in a place of curiosity and really seeking to understand, you know. And if we can practice that, then communication can flow.
Yeah. And to truly listen while the other is speaking, and then taking their cue to continue the conversation, and then it will go somewhere really interesting, won't it?
Yeah.
That's when absolutely. We find solutions. Yeah. So, tell us more. I love it.
Oh, wow. You know, it's such a big, beautiful conversation. When you think about communication itself and the importance of it, without communication, we can't even take an idea and manifest it into reality. You know, you could have the most wonderful idea, but if you can't communicate that idea initially, even with yourself, I mean, communication happens internally, excuse me, and then with the outside world, then it would remain only an idea. I mean, Einstein's genius understandings of the mechanics of the universe would have amounted to nothing if he couldn't communicate them, you know, and or a song, a beautiful song wouldn't have meant anything without the ability to communicate that music, you know, whether it be through instruments or voice. So communication itself, I think, is really intrinsic to us and our experience of life, but we don't pay much attention to it. We don't teach our children conscious communication, you know. Well, some of us do, but generally speaking, in schools, there's no subjects on, you know, how to listen properly and how to communicate and how to open your mind and how to understand that there's many, many ways, there's many paths, and they're all as valid as each other, you know. And I think, you know, I mean, when we've got a lot in common with someone, communication's easy. You know, if you're chatting with someone who sees the world the way you do, and they were brought up in the same environment as you, and they look similar to you, and they dress similarly to you, you know, that's easy communication. But also at the same time, the bandwidth of creative potential from a very narrow cross section of demographic is thin, it's narrow. Whereas if you've got true diversity, you know, cross culture, cross gender, cross age, cross religion, cross political belief, if you've got true diversity in the room and people can lean into conscious communication with each other, then the bandwidth of collaboration is broad. I believe that's when we'll solve the biggest problems, you know, and through that connection. And it takes communication. And so it's easy to communicate with someone you're very similar to, but more tricky with people where there's difference. But it's conscious communication that can help us cross those divides. And I believe that the place to start is with what we've got in common. And, I mean, it's easy to see the differences. If you look very different to me and you have a different spiritual or religious belief or political belief, it's easy to see the differences. But let's just peel back one layer and have a look at what we've got in common, because there's a lot. You know, I mean, apart from the fact that we both bleed the same color blood, which I love, we've all got the same color blood, but also things like we both need food and shelter and water. We both feel the pain of loss when a loved one dies, you know. We both have the same emotional experiences. We have a lot in common. In fact, when we can connect like that through things like empathy, I can feel your pain, regardless of where you grew up, you know. So I think if we can remember these basics and connect on that basic level of humanity, then we can start to safely explore the differences and hopefully broaden our respective horizons as we talk, you know.
Mm-hmm. How beautiful. I've often thought most wars come from lack of communication, because both sides most likely want the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they both know that a lot of carnage and, you know, bad things come from war. But when it boils, right, from not listening to the other side, then,
yeah,
things go sideways.
And also most wars, and I don't mean, I'm about to generalize, and I'm going to precurse this by saying that I'm not trying to be sexist. But most wars come from men. In fact, most violence in the world comes from men. And I'm not blaming men. I'm just stating the data. And that's why my book, The Art of Conscious Communication, was written for thoughtful men. It's written for men because I know it's the same in the States and in Australia. Our boys are indoctrinated into a patriarchal structure, as well as our girls. We're all born into this patriarchal structure, and in its essence, the patriarchy is a, a structure of dominance. So who can be more dominant over the other person? So we teach our boys that to survive, they need to dominate. And they end up dominating each other, their friends, their male friends, and then they end up dominating their partners, whether that be male or female. And I believe that things like racism and sexism have come from patriarchal structures where it's I need to dominate someone who's not me, whether it's because they look different or they you know, for whatever reason. And so our boys are suffering under this structure as well, and they get taught to devoid themselves of their emotional self. And so we end up with these men who can't even access their emotions. They've got the full range of emotions. They've just been taught that it's weak and vulnerable to access them, let alone express them. So you end up with these relationships where men have these partners who are screaming out in exacerbation, saying, "Tell me how you feel. You are an island. I feel like I've lost you. Where are you? Talk to me how you feel." And the guy's just there going, "What do you mean? I don't feel anything." It's either they're either calm, supposedly calm, or flick a switch and they're super angry.
Yeah.
And I think that's sad. You know, it's really sad. And so I think men especially could do well with some strategies and some tools and some practices for them to rediscover their emotional selves, and that's okay, for them to know that vulnerability is a strength, not a weakness, and to begin to communicate that.
Beautiful. Yeah, the male energy is my way or the highway, isn't it? I know, and this is the way we're going, and all of you come along or else.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then how do you feel the female way of dealing with things in contrast? How do you express that?
Yeah. How the female way of dealing with things?
Yeah, like a woman will be closer to being more empathetic, listening with her heart, and, you know, feeling the other person's situation or side, right? Quicker, I think, not always.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's feminine and masculine energy styles, and we all have access to both. So men can access feminine energy, and females, women, or whatever gender you want me to address you as, that's a whole other story. I really don't mind. But however you identify, you can access feminine and masculine energy.
Yeah.
We all can. So feminine energy is expressive and expansive and lateral. The feminine energy style has, a broad scope of focus in any given moment, whereas the masculine energy can only focus on one thing. The feminine energy is emotional and present and in the moment and expansive, whereas the masculine energy is kind of more literal. You know, if you say to someone who's in their masculine, if you say to someone, you never do anything for me, they take that very literally, that I never do anything for you. And then they get upset because they feel unappreciated, and they say, "I do things for you all the time." What the masculine energy wasn't understanding is that in that moment, the feminine was just expressing herself. She was just saying, "In this moment, I wish you would do that thing for me that I've been asking you to do, and I'm feeling this emotion right now." So the feminine is in the moment and expressive, emotional, and also necessarily can dance through this beautiful wide spectrum of emotions very quickly and nimbly. And the masculine, that takes the masculine ages to warm up to an emotion, and it's usually anger. But the masculine is just confounded by the feminine being able to 1 minute be, gushing beautiful love and cuddles, and then the next minute in a rage, and then the next minute dancing happily and joyfully around the lounge room. And the masculine is like, "Oh my, you are crazy. What's going on?" But look, I think it's interesting, when I run a public workshop, because I run workshops on personal development, and if I put a workshop out to the public, every time, 90% females that come to the workshop, because women are open to these conversations. Women are open to talking about the nuances of this emotional journey of being human. And men, sadly, because I think they need it, men are kind of closed off to it. You know, it's not men that pick up my book. It's women that pick up my book and read it and then give it to their husbands or sons or brothers and say, hey, you should read this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
It is interesting. There are some things that women really dominate. Like when I was becoming a naturopathic doctor, it was 80% women.
Mm.
Riding horses, 80% women.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I wonder, you know, just because I think naturopathic medicine in general has more feminine principles, right? Because it's fluid.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and connected to the earth, you know. I think, mm-hmm. again, we're generalizing, but and I know there are exceptions to every generalization, but I think for us to be able to have a conversation about these things, we need to be able to excuse ourselves and allow ourselves to generalize, so we'll just carry on doing that. Mm-hmm. But yes, generally women are more connected to the earth, I believe, you know, and women birth babies. I still, to this day, that's the biggest miracle, beautiful miracle for me. I still, when I think about it and contemplate it, which I do a lot because my partner works as a birth support worker and she does pregnancy pre and postnatal Pilates and hypnobirthing and all beautiful stuff. She's a doula. And so her work is all in the space in that perinatal period. So I'm around it a lot. And it blows me away. And so women are so obviously connected to life because you have this ability to have the miracle of a human being growing inside you and then birthing this baby and then nurturing and feeding this baby from your body, and this baby then grows to become an adult. It's really quite incredible. And so it's obvious that there's that immediate connection to life and the earth for women. But for men, we get taught to disconnect from all of that stuff because in generations gone by, we had to toughen up, you know, suck it up, harden up, man up, don't cry like a girl. That's what we tell our boys. It's, and I understand in the past that was necessary in times of the Great Depression or the wars and the famines and all of the hardship that we've gone through. But now we're not, I mean, yes, we're potentially moving towards some sort of recession again economically, but day to day, you're not walking down the street. There's no lion coming to eat you. We're safer than we've ever been before, you know, so we're safe enough to explore, to allow our men to explore their emotional sides, their empathy, their compassion, their connection to life, to nature, to others, you know, be it men or women. And I think that's a piece of work that needs to happen. I'm going on a little bit of a rant now, Jane, but I'm passionate about this. And, you know, as much as we need equality and as much as we need, I believe we need women in decision-making roles so that we can have some feminine wisdom start to play a part in the way that we operate humanity. Yes, we need that 100%. We need it. But at the same time, there's a project that needs to be happening at the same time. If we're not evolving our men, there's no point in putting women into decision-making roles if they have to play the man's game. That's just silly. We need it to be more broad in terms of our access to our humanity, and that means accessing feminine wisdom and power, you know, I believe.
Yeah. Yes, and I was just going to add to your comments, which I loved. You know, when I get a male patient, 8 out of 10 times, you know, I'll ask them, they're maybe quite sick with something, and I'll be like, is there a mental, emotional thing that happened to you that was difficult? And they'll say, no, nothing. Everything's great. And then as you go into it, you know, their mother died at 4.
Yeah.
They had divorce at 22. Their best friend passed away, you know, 3 years ago. And you're like, what? Nothing?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Whereas most women can say, yeah, I've got this, 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 and this, right? They're more in tune with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, I've reached out to, he is a friend, but also it's a professional relationship as well. But I, you know, we've known each other for a long time, and I just had a feeling the other day. I just had a feeling, and we're not really in contact that regularly if it's not to do with work, but I had a feeling and I just reached out to him and I said, hey, are you okay? Mm. And he actually opened up and he said, no, I'm not. I'm struggling. And I said, let me take you out for lunch. Let's just go and sit down. And we went out for lunch and I sat down and he opened up and he's depressed, anxious. He feels like he's losing everything, his marriage, he feels lost in his work. He's really in a low point. And I said, are you seeing someone? Have you reached out? And he goes, no, I can't do that. And I said, why not? He said, I've got trust issues. I can't trust a therapist or anything. And I said, wow, have you got anyone that you talk to? And he said, no one knows where I'm at.
Mm.
And I said, your wife knows. She's the closest person to you. You've got four children. She knows. He goes, yeah, but I can't really talk about this stuff with her. And I said, open up, let her in. You know, let her know that you're struggling. And he said, yeah, but I don't want her to worry. I've got to fix it myself. And as he was talking, I was listening and empathy was flowing through me. And I was thinking and compassion. And I was thinking, wow, this is such a common story, but men don't share. And male suicide is crazy rates of male suicide. It's really sad. And like you say, you ask most of them, you ask them how they're going and they say, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because admitting to it is seen as a weakness.
Mm.
Whereas the female, the wife, would love nothing more than for him to open up to her, right? And uh-huh. help him solve this.
Yeah. Or even just for him to be connected to his emotion enough and feel safe enough in the relationship to share with her where he's at.
Yeah. So that difficulty in communicating that you feel comes from a male inability to admit that they're vulnerable, right? They have to always be strong.
We got taught that as boys, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real hurdle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Look, I think I'm hopeful. You know, there's a lot of good people out there, men and women, that are aware of this and are doing what they can to help us evolve and to help men soften and access their own vulnerability. There's a lot of work going on. You know, there's many Brené Browns doing wonderful work. You know, she's just the most famous of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I continue to meet lots of men and women who are doing beautiful work in this space.
Yeah. And I find opening that communication and allowing that vulnerability is the ability to admit that you too are human and have had all kinds of things happen, right?
Yeah.
So this conversation is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Because like you admitted that right off the...
yeah.
But...
I've done a lot of work on this. I'm kind of driven, passionately driven in this space. And as part of that, I now share publicly, I share what were my deepest, darkest, most shameful periods and experiences and chapters in my life. And the reason that I'm sharing them is because I'm hoping that by me being so vulnerable, that it might shine a light for other men and women, if there are women who are scared to be vulnerable as well, that it's okay. We're human, you know, and we're perfectly imperfect.
Yes.
And we all go through our version of trauma. We all go through our version of worry and self-doubt. We all, you know, have these fears when we're little that what if I'm not enough? What if I'm not connected? What if I'm isolated? What if I'm not loved? You know, we all experience this, but we don't know that everyone else does. We think we're all alone, and especially men, because we get taught not to express your vulnerability. So we keep it to ourselves. I mean, my most shameful stuff and my hardest period is when I put all of my anxieties into sexual intimacy, and I developed proper anxiety around sex, making love, and I became completely dysfunctional in my marriage. And it was the most embarrassing, shameful, upsetting, secret torture And my wife and I didn't tell anyone because we were both so embarrassed and ashamed. And this went on for years. And I was pretending to be happy. So on the outside, I had the, you know, the marriage and the two kids and the white picket fence and the corporate job, and I was earning good money. And, you know, the outside world thought that I was this happy person, like an Instagram feed, you know. Yeah. And behind that, I was deeply, deeply unhappy and desperate. I almost lost all hope.
Yeah.
And so for me to share that initially, sharing your trauma is also part of the healing process. You know, you can't heal on the island all on your own. I couldn't have healed that sexual dysfunction. I couldn't have healed that on my own. You know, I needed to start sharing it, and I finally had the courage to share with a male friend, a brother. Just a little bit. I just kind of alluded to it. And then as I started to have the confidence to share my struggles more and begin my healing process and go through my midlife awakening, healing began. And then more men would come to me and say, oh, wow, you too? I thought I was the only one.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Such a beautiful gift it ends up being. And when you shine light on it, all like it loses its power over you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah. Oh, it's so beautiful, Jim. I love what you're teaching. It's so valuable. And you're right. It starts with each of us because we all, every last human on the planet has something similar. And then once you learn that, right, then you see it in corporate. You see it like it's a fractal.
Yeah, it really is. It's so true. That's such a beautiful way to put it. The micro and the macro, and they're all in each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had here in Australia a few weeks ago, we had Men's Mental Health Week. And for one of my corporate clients, I offered to come in and facilitate a men's circle, which they didn't really know what that was. I just said, look, we're just going to get the males together and I'm just going to create a safe space for us to talk. And I'll share my story and yada, yada. And they said, you know, and we agreed that the fee that they would normally pay me would go to a men's mental health charity. And so we sat in a room with 12 corporate leaders in suits and ties. And through the course of this conversation and me sharing, they felt safe enough to open up. Not all of them, but most of them. Mm-hmm. And they opened up. And the CEO was sitting there with the executive team. So this is their boss. And I know him very well because I've been coaching him for a couple of years. And he opened up and he told them how he experiences anxiety. And you should have seen the room. They all just softened because the boss just admitted that he experiences anxiety.
Right.
And they all just lent in. They felt more connected with him. They felt safe. They then started sharing as well. At the end of this, you know, 2 hours together, it was beautiful. These men were hugging each other to say goodbye. And the connection had just deepened between all of them.
You know, yeah.
Really lovely.
So powerful. And then you see the connections through the heart as well, not just the mind, right? Which is just incredible.
Yeah, completely.
Thank you, Jim. So how do people find your book and more about you?
I guess the hub where everything sits is on the website, which is jemfuller.com.
Mm-hmm.
So with a J, JEMFULLER.com. And you can get my book from there. Although over in the States, it might be easier for you to get my book from Amazon or Booktopia or anywhere where you can buy books. Pretty sure you can get the book. The Audible book, I'm really excited about this because I listen to all of my books. And so my book will be on Audible, I'm hoping within the next few weeks from when we're talking now anyway. So we're in the middle of July now. So I'm hoping in the next few weeks it'll be on Audible. You can watch my TEDx talk. Just go onto YouTube and type in Jem Fuller. You can follow me on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn. It's all Jem Fuller. I don't use my Twitter account and I'm pretty happy about that because I'm not on Twitter, so I can't be cancelled.
Right.
So no one can cancel me. Although that's not to say that people couldn't you know, be trolls and get on there and be horrible online about me, but that doesn't, I'm not worried about that.
No.
Yeah. So that's how you can find me. I'm really accessible. Please reach out to me. And you know, shoot me an email even. You can do that through my website. If you are in a role of leadership in your work, if you're a leader and you have a team, or if you run your own business, we're building a community of post-pandemic leaders who want to improve their communication. And we've built an online course to that end. If you're interested in that online course around more conscious communication for leaders, please reach out to me and I'll welcome you into the community.
Okay, that's incredible. So just to remind everyone, the book is called The Art of Conscious Communication for Thoughtful Men. And I will put the links in the show notes.
And can I just say, Jane,
yes,
women are loving the book.
Yes.
I'm getting emails from lots of women saying, I know you wrote this book for men, but I got so much out of it. So please don't be put off by the title. My book writing mentor suggested that I write for an audience, and she said, I think men really need this book and you should write for them. And I agreed with her, so I did, but it's for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's clear and so valuable for everyone, for the whole planet.
Thanks so much, Jane. It's been so lovely to talk with you.
You too. And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up, spiral out. If you've enjoyed the information in this episode, share it with someone you care about and know will benefit. There is one thing for certain. Meltdowns are inevitable. Let's move into mastery together. In the show notes, you'll find my link tree, which has links to many of the most popular platforms. You'll also find links to connect to the featured guest, webpage, and social media. Thanks again for being committed to mastery. Change in this world really starts within each of us.